for the Economic Development Committee meeting Tuesday, February 7th, 2017 at 6:10. We do not have a quorum, so we're going to open up some business items just for discussion, but there will be no action taken on any of these items at this point. We have Alderman Funkhauser and Alderman Cook, President, staff, then, and everyone. Did you sign in, or does he have to still? Or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's still an official meeting. You can't.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then now we'll move right to Lynn at EDC number 4, EDC 2017-13. She can give us our update.
Sure. So I am continuing to work on downtown redevelopment with some private individuals looking at potentially doing some new development in the downtown area, and I'll be posted on that. We actually have identified another new grocer looking at a potential grocery store south of town. As a matter of fact, I'm happy to report that Friday morning, Bart and I will be meeting with that individual at one of his grocery stores to tour that facility. And so it would be a perfect fit, you know, about a 35,000 square foot store, all of the right departments, including fresh meat, fresh veggies. So we're hopeful that he'll be receptive. So conversations have gone well so far.
Do sometimes those people, if they had others like silent investors, do they ever ask you for that? Just something I was thinking about at one point.
Well, most grocery operators are family-owned operations.
Okay.
It's sort of like that industry. Every single one that I've found has been kind of like a family-owned thing where the father's passing it down to their, you know, it's multi-generational, and sometimes it's brothers and stuff like that. It's just, that's that independent grocer model. So I haven't run across anybody that has been looking for investors, but
I know that sometimes they will have somebody piggyback on with them if they're making that decision.
Yeah. Do you have someone that is interested?
It was something that I was curious about, so I was wondering. Okay.
Because
you look to invest in a grocery store in South
Carolina. We should talk.
Tell us. Do tell more.
Can we back up on the downtown? I saw the article today about 1836.
Yes.
So kind of good news.
Very good news. Yes. So it'll be open in the spring, and so that'll be exciting. And I think, you know, that model of that, like a Gatsby type of a thing, the provisions type thing, that is, if you went to downtown Chicago, there are a number of restaurants that have that sort of theme. So I think that it's interesting. Dale and Raphael are really cutting edge. So
it's spring 17.
Spring of 17.
Okay.
Yes. Spring of 17. So anyway, and that grocery store will keep you posted. So, but Friday morning we have a meeting. North of the River Kendall Crossing, obviously, former Countryside. I just kind of say that because sometimes Kendall Crossing and Kendall Marketplace get mixed up. We have a significant user that is looking at coming to that site, and we had a second meeting actually with city staff, so I would hope that in the next month or so we'll be going with public with some information about what that project would entail, what the investment would be, how many jobs would be created, but it's a pretty significant user to that site. So.
We would expect to have an inducement resolution in front of you actually next month.
Yes.
Details of the project might not be public yet at that point, but the inducement resolution is just, you know, kind of sets the base for it. But I would expect at the latest it would be the week after that it would be public.
Yes, so coming soon, and it'll be great. Kendall Marketplace. So Alex Berman is no longer using CB Richard Ellis. He's hired a new company to represent him. They actually officially started yesterday, and you know, we're continue to work with outlot users, inline users, and on the residential portion as well to get some activity going there. Regarding one of the things that's been important and kind of pivotal on the residential has been the SSA, and Bart's been working with Alex and Kathy and all of the parties, because it looks like there's going to be a pretty, hopefully, a simple resolution to that, which would really make it easy.
No, the county did confirm today. We actually presented it to them today, and they got back to me today that the legal descriptions within the Kennel Marketplace SSA were properly, were drawn in one way, encompassing a portion of the property, so only the commercial portion, and the residential portion to the north of the commercial portion should not be in the SSA, and it had been. And a couple of those properties had actually been paying into the SSA for the past 10 years or so. And so finally we were able to confirm that that was improperly applied, and the county is considering it a Scrivener's error, basically, and they're going to be removing that in the next, like, 30 days.
So with the Scrivener's error, obviously that's simple to correct.
Yes.
Is there any financial impact on the payments already made with the SSA? How will that...
Not that I'm aware of. No, I don't.
I think
the only remedy that the guy, that the owner would have, would be to basically litigate against the bond company, and he's expressed no interest in doing so at this point. So
it was very minimal at best at this point, and since it was only he was the sole owner, so he would have been the sole owner of the rest, other than the couple of retailers. So I think it will be. So that's a real positive move in the right direction.
That's huge.
So
yeah,
So Alex has been great to work with, and he's really wanting to do everything in his power to see things happen at Kendall Marketplace. So I believe that we will have some movement this year
on the Kendall Marketplace. We still have the 3-way land swap in place. That agreement. Do we ever see that happening, or do we see that?
There is no agreement. There's a loose framework between the property owners that they would agree to it, that there'd
but
be an understanding. I'm not sure that I'd recommend it at this point. I know we've talked internally just about maybe making the recommendation to actually sell that property. We'll see how that goes.
Yeah. Just thinking long term about that, the parcel that we would end up with. Inaccessible, so is it even...
We agreed not to use it for a police station, which is really what we need property in that area of the city for, and I don't think that the Rob Roy parcel, which is where we would eventually
site it... It's the furthest west parcel, right?
Yeah, it's not even annexed to the city yet, and they've given us no intention to. So.
Okay, so for future discussion.
Yeah.
And North River was referring to Cedarhurst, and they're obviously going to begin the approval process with the city. And I've been working with Jordan Dorsey and the folks from Dover, and hopefully it'll be a much-needed additional service to our community, because assisted living is key. We have an aging population everywhere, and the whole baby boomers are getting old. Just the biggest population growing, and also the memory care. It's an important part when you think about health care. It's just so important for all of us. So having that memory care component, what this will bring, is much needed to our community. And then the industrial user, I actually talked to our big industrial user while I was in Hawaii, and so we're waiting. We're hoping that this week that their board will come out with a decision, and then... we've done the best that we can, so we have to see what their decision is going to be. So I would anticipate, though, within the next week to hear from them as to if we ended up in number one or number two position.
And the enterprise zone status, as it says, is approved by
It's approved,
Bill,
yes.
Which is great.
Yes. Yes. So actually, at the enterprise zone meeting last month, we did the industrial project, which was for two locations, Yorkville and the other, and then Justine's Go For It Sports and also Cedarhurst. So they all got enterprise zone. They made it through the IRBDA process. So now that they are off to, I talked to Andy yesterday, Andy Hamilton from IRBDA, and everything is off to the state to get certified. And it seems like, I guess it's like when you go away, was that like 3 months ago? It was like 3 weeks ago. So it takes 6 weeks. So.
And is the certifying, is that more procedural?
Yes, from DCEO.
Okay.
So
we're basically good. It's just they have to go through their paperwork.
Yes,
downstate.
Yes. So, and we were working on the locations for the special census, but I understand the special census is not going to happen.
Well, it's delayed for now. Okay. Yeah, we're working different angles to try to get it on delay.
Okay. That's all that I have.
Okay, we'll move on to item number five then. Thanks, Lynn. EDC 2017-14, Cedarhurst Living, Assisted Living and Memory Care Facility.
So staff received a call probably late last year, someone interested in Cannonball Trails, the property on the northeast corner of Veterans Parkway and Cannonball Trail. And we had received calls like this in the past and, you know, met with the individual and they expressed interest in doing a assisted living facility, which had never been proposed on the site before. Went through a couple of interviews, invited Lynn in, and the project took legs pretty quickly. The petitioner is proposing, they have also done similar sites from communities in their St. Louis area.
The one that they just finished is in Naperville.
In Naperville. Mm-hmm. They do have one in this area, and they're moving into this market, and Naperville was one of the places. They found this site that was accessible to not only retail, but to healthcare in the area, and we sat and talked about what the existing plan had with the Cannonball Trails development and the proposal before you as a result of those conversations. So they're looking to maintain the underlying zoning of B2 on this property, but also include uses that are in the O and the B1 district, and they're proposing to do a memory care and assisted living facility, a 73-unit, two-story facility. They are also planning future development to the north of the site, and that's probably going to be a type of medical office building. In staff's notes, there's a couple of things I just want to address. One is that they're, in the original plan, they had two plans presented to us. The future entrance was called the right in and right out. They want to revise that to just say a future access because they may go for a full access, possibly. So a revised plan does state that it's a future access and not a right in and right out. And they also are planning to go before City Council, as I mentioned, for the public hearing to amend the annexation agreement. And that'll be at the February 14th meeting. The staff had inadvertently put February 14th as a date of when we're going to, for final consideration, but it's actually the 28th, so it'll be that following meeting. And it's at the end of the memo as well, but I just wanted to clarify that early on. In the original agreement, there was a requirement for intersection improvements to Veterans Parkway and Cannonball Trail, but that was a result of the commercial land use that was there, the multiple lots. This was reviewed by our engineer, and the petitioner's engineer found that the trip generation from this type of use is going to be far less than what a commercial would generate. So they are requesting to have that removed, that requirement for those improvements removed as part of the annexation agreement amendment. Stormwater has been addressed. They are proposing to do a dry detention basin along the Veterans Parkway frontage. Public utilities are available. They're going to tap into water from the west off of Cannonball Trail. They're going to have sewer is already running along the north side of 34. They're going to tap into that. A comprehensive plan did designate this area a suburban neighborhood, but there was language in the comprehensive plan that specifically stated that the city should seek out more senior and active adult housing because the need and such services are highly anticipated in the area as we age. So we're confident in that this underlying B2 is consistent for the nursing home, rest home type of use. It's being met. So there are a couple of proposed variances that the PUD will require, and that's mostly dealing with signage. They're proposing three signs. Because of the size of the lot is 6 acres. Anything over 3 acres is allowed to have, and two frontages is allowed to have two signs per frontage. What they are proposing is one sign along perpendicular along the Cannonball Trail frontage, and then two signs along the US 34 one sign, and two signs along Cannonball Trail. Staff felt that when the development the main development comes in, that the two signs would be appropriate, but the third sign should be timed at when the future medical office building and entrance in place, then they can have that third sign. But the variance has to do with the location of the signs and the number of signs and the size. The proposed annexation talks about some of the areas that they are looking to change from the original and the amended agreement, which has to do with the land use, the land plan, recapture is no longer needed, the infrastructure improvements to the roadway, as well as they are requesting that they're allowed to build under the current building code that we have in place now. So they're going before Planning and Zoning Commission tomorrow night to talk about the amended plan, which will result in a revised final plat attached to the new proposed annexation agreement. And their engineer, Dave Shelton, HR Green, is here to answer any questions that anyone may have.
So, do you want to go first? I know Chris has some issues.
Signage is one that I want to touch on first. I believe, reading the ordinance, yes, on a parcel 3 acres or more, it's allowed signage. There's 3 acres or more, and then there's 3 acres or more with frontages in excess of 800 feet with two entrance exits 600 feet apart. They don't meet that criteria of the frontage, so they fall to the lesser category.
They would.
Which, my concern is the size of the signs.
Okay.
Three signs. I like the idea of the monument sign on the corner. Mm-hmm. It's consistent with Kendall Marketplace, the Kendall County Courthouse. So if it, their size, 15 foot wide, 10 foot tall, does bother me.
Okay.
If it was in the 6 foot range, consistent with the other signs in the area, I would have no issue with that. I like that monument idea. The other two, 15 foot by 10 foot, is quite a sign still. It's significantly larger than what's called for in the ordinances. I'm willing to give a little bit, but I think the height would need to come down. The square footage needs to be reduced a little bit on those. We're talking a big monument sign that's an individual user, I assume. I don't know what they're going to put on the monument sign, but I assume it's for Cedarhurst. The sign at their entrance, I assume, is strictly Cedarhurst. Whether or not it's an informational, I don't know. And then the third sign, that could be an electronic reader board.
That's the north one you're talking about?
Yeah. Okay. It's an awful lot of signage for 6 acres. 10 by 15 is a lot of signage, double-sided. So, if they go three signs, if the monument is 6 foot tall and the other two are as well 6 foot tall, I'd be more comfortable with that. Or if they're 5 feet by 10 foot, given the height one way or the width the other. I just think it's a little too much signage for this site, this size of site. Especially reading through what the ordinances have for the intent. So that's kind of my thing, is I'd like to see them reduce the signage, what they're asking for. So.
The height or just the square footage?
Well, that takes care of it.
Height on the monument sign, most certainly, and then square footage on the other two, whether they reduce the height or they bring it in, because right now they're asking for all of them to be 15 by 10. Correct.
If you got 10 feet tall, 15 wide.
Right.
The ordinance allows them to go up to 12 feet.
12 feet, right. But they're limited to 64 square feet. So that's your defining factor. You can go 12 feet tall, but your sign would be 5.5 feet wide. So not very large, and you can only have 50% of it as actual sign face. So that does limit it. I'd be willing to give them a little more. If they go 10 feet, they're 6 feet wide, something of the sort. They're not as big, but I'm more comfortable on the 6 to 8 foot tall for the additional signs. I think they call them just property signs. But if they could reduce these signs, if they want to keep the 15 foot high, reduce them down to 6 feet. If they want to go to 10 foot, narrow them. It's a lot of signage, I think. That's all I have on that one there. So, Ken, any thoughts?
So two of them would be right away, right?
Correct.
And then the third would be down the road. So
held out for
the furthest
what they
north.
Do later.
Mm-hmm. I guess it's a good project. So how does that affect, if you wanted to talk about the signs design-wise, is that Sure. How does that work in the process as far as timing?
Chris, actually, sure. Just give you an idea of what they've used in the past and what they're looking for. I think his description was kind of vague. Because mm-hmm. right now, and how is this measured would be my question.
It's the geometric shape around.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Right. The actual signage is like 3.5 by 12.
Right. So your 64 square feet
would be that geometric shape around the wall.
Is this right here.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And in actuality, it doesn't include this white space below and the white space above. Okay. So your 64 square feet of actual sign face would be just a box around the lettering and the logo.
Correct.
Okay.
So now what the PUD is trying to allow is the actual sign itself, all monumentation, adornments, anything of the sort. So here we're at 12...
So it's 12 by 3'8".
Yeah, you've got the 3'8" going outside of it.
I think that's 3'8" there.
So you have, you know, 18 foot wide, 7 foot tall. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, if that's the type of sign they're putting on the corner.
Yeah, that's not as bad.
I was thinking
like you go to the countryside there, if they're putting big ones like that on, that's...
All right, this fits in scale with what would be on the corner there.
Right.
Across the street.
If they have a smaller version, or I'm not sure what they would do at the actual entrance...
As I understand it, yes, at the entrance those would be smaller. A smaller size, more like maybe a 4x4,
by 5,
something
like that.
Well, staff received that image. They did not want to include that into the PUD document.
Which is fine.
Right,
and
exactly.
And I get that. This helps me.
Perception-wise, I think that helps.
It was recommended that they did provide this at the meeting. Mm-hmm. They just didn't want it as an attachment because they didn't want to be tied to that design.
No. Yeah, the 15 foot, this exceeds the 15 foot just slightly because that's a little above it. But that type of a sign, even though it's, you know, 7 foot tall.
Because it's a lot of its brick, it looks like.
And,
yeah.
And you know, you're going to put landscape up against it. The Kendall Marketplace is up on it's halfway up that berm. Actually, it's only about a foot and a half, 2 feet up. And then the courthouse, that sign is up a couple feet as well. So even though they're, you know, 4 foot and 5.5 feet, it'll be in scale. But I don't think it would be as appropriate for their entrance sign and the, you know, the future sign, as it's an individual user. It's not something they need to be able to put, you know, multi-tenants on there. So if you're just identifying that one, I think just the other one to be a little smaller. But I think that there would work for the monument on the corner as, you know, 7.5 feet tall. That makes me more comfortable to see this.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah,
great.
It definitely
helps.
To
be classy.
I was hoping that was in here, and I didn't see anything about it.
Yeah.
So I started picturing.
Some discussion. I had to talk to him tonight, and he also said he would take a picture of his existing sign so that I can bring it with tomorrow. That may help, you know. The picture, I think, explains a lot more than the description.
Yeah, and if he has what they do with the smaller version, that would be great. Maybe we have to identify the large monument sign and the property sign, the size of that one, but 15 foot by 7.5 or 8 feet for the monument, and then the other one's a little bit smaller. That gives me a much greater comfort level seeing that and knowing that that's what they built elsewhere. So I think that'll work with the neighborhood.
Was there anything else?
I wanted to ask about the underlying zoning. Obviously, it's B2 right now. Mm-hmm. Typically, this type of a use has an R4 underlying zoning with either a special use or a PUD. In other communities and surroundings, I looked up a half dozen of them, and they're pretty much falling in that basically a high-density multi-use. And it's either, depending on the type of community, it's a special use or a PUD. And I know the underlying use here is already approved with a B2. And they want to have the option for any type of business or office up at the north end. Is there a reason we wouldn't separate the classification, you know, to give them an underlying R zoning in?
Yes.
Sure,
there is.
Fill me out now for the staff, though.
For staff, when we do PUDs and we have separate zones, it's best to have separate lots. And this is all going to be one lot. So that's another reason. We looked at the balance of what would be approved in an R4, because we did, actually, mm-hmm. Lynn and I talked mm-hmm. about okay. this, versus a B2. R4, you have most of the uses that they're requesting, adult daycare. They think they're going to have like a barbershop or you know
right.
beauty parlor right. in there, the medical clinic, the professional office. Those are not permitted in an R4 district. Except for the adult daycare, that's a special use. But if you look at it with the B2 uses, all of those uses are permitted outright. In addition to this being a nursing home, kind of rest home kind mm-hmm. of use, that's permitted outright in the B2. So we felt that the balance was best as a B2 than as an R4 with a lot of exceptions or...
Okay. So that's the rationale behind it, is just because of these specialized uses they have within it. Mm-hmm. Even though, you know, there are others that when they do their R4 underlying with the PUD, they make that exception to allow all... Mm-hmm. You know, accessory uses to the assistive living memory care, which would be
right.
those types.
Yeah.
Do we think that this is always going to be one lot that they will not subdivide the northern piece off? Because that would affect
setbacks a lot of things. Yeah. We brought that up in plan council. Actually, as it exists now, it's two lots.
Right. So they're going to consolidate.
They're
going
to consolidate, and their idea is to have ownership of the entire lot, even the accessory building, even though they may not operate the use.
They may
there.
Lease it and run it separately, yes. but they will maintain yes. ownership of. Okay. I just want to make sure, because that's, yes. you know, if it doesn't develop on the north side for five,
right.
10 years, do they subdivide it, and then do we have to deal with other constraints on the property?
If they subdivided that the way it sits right now,
it'd be
very building code wise. Their fire separation,
they wouldn't have.
It jumps up exponentially when it's a separate lot.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're on the same lot, technically those buildings by the code could be within 22 feet of each other as long as they're fire rated walls.
Right.
If the exact same structures, the building code basically says that this property line is considered a structure. So your fire separation is going to be, you know,
mm-hmm.
20 at least 25 feet if you have a 4-hour firewall on that thing. So if they separate it, they could sell to a very small user.
Yeah.
Okay. And then I know this is a conceptual site plan. The fenced area, I have no problem with the fence there, but the courtyard area encroaches on. Is that solidified in that location, or is it going to be pulled back a bit?
So the courtyard area, and then it looks like there's like a trellis or something.
Just to tell you the difference between these two, this is what's in the packet, and this is current today.
Okay.
And what is different is this got pulled.
So we're 12 feet away now.
Yeah, we're 12 feet away in the sidewalk.
Weird.
It's an access
oh,
issue.
Right.
They instead of two access points, they want one.
And
so that's the difference
right.
between these two plans. Otherwise,
right.
it's the same. I just wanted to bring it for representation of what we're doing.
And furthermore, trellises as well as like decks or patios or those outside, they're not considered part of the
right.
structure.
Now, if it was an overhead pergola, a large structure, that would be.
Well, no,
so that
pergolas would be, they're permitted obstructions. Those are called accessory structures.
So that would be permitted,
those are
even
permitted
though.
Obstructions in any required yard.
Up to how?
Up to 15
far?
Feet.
Up to 15.
In
okay.
height, and then 5 feet away from the property line.
I just want to make sure that there's, you know, obviously we don't know what the neighbor is going to do with ever, but 5 feet, you know, to having your users not knowing what that could be. I know what we have it planned for our future zoning. I'm just looking out for, you know, neighbors on that one. So I do like the idea of connecting that sidewalk all the way around.
Yeah.
I did notice that the sidewalk stops at the entrance drive. Was there discussion
yes.
of moving that or extending that to the northern end of the property?
No, there was not a discussion of extending it to the northern end. That was required because it's going to connect to the...
It's going to connect to the
exactly,
trail.
Exactly, to the
right.
trail. That
yeah,
that would
be a...
Mm-hmm.
I'd have shown a sidewalk on the north
mm-hmm.
and the trails on the south.
Right.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So they're going to actually build that as the IDOT part
IDOT.
Of the project.
Right,
yep.
and we're just providing a connection.
Why would we not ask them to connect... up to the kind of marketplace to the north where their trail is. I mean, I'm just asking, would it be something to ask for a connection? Going up there? I mean, even if it's something that's written in as something that is done with the future development, the northern part, to make that connection, but I think I'm thinking complete streets
it.
Trying to have
we,
this done.
Sure. Absolutely. We can definitely approach... the owner about that.
Yeah. it's not a requirement, but it's just going to ask them if it's, mm-hmm. and even if it's written, or maybe they go a little bit further, or kind of split the difference now and then when the future development comes in.
I mean, right now, the only thing, I mean, I think you'd be open to it, for sure, is it being a rural section and ditching, and then an unsignalized intersection.
Up there.
Yeah, up there.
That's why, you know, maybe you build it up to the jog there. It does go through that end, but then when this builds,
right,
hopefully in a few years, maybe the road's been improved as Cannonball has been targeted for improvements.
Right. Or back to our original comment, if they do a full intersection up there, then that would be
right.
a warranted requirement condition that we put in there.
Yeah, I think that try to work that in and however we can do that.
Sure.
I think that would be good to have those connections, absolutely. I mean, dead end sidewalks.
Yeah.
Trying to make these connections.
Well, plus, isn't that where the intersection where the path's going to get moved over to the
IDA? Are you talking about?
Yeah.
It's putting the trail.
Yeah.
So on the south side.
Right.
It's on right here.
And it was going to move across and go on the north side then, right?
Path comes here.
Yeah.
Comes down.
Right.
And then once it gets to Game Farm, it comes back up.
That's my thought.
North side. I try.
Absolutely.
Come on. The Romans built the aqueducts in the Colosseum thousands of years ago. They can't build a bridge for a trail. It's I thought. That's true.
Okay.
I think those are kind of all the questions and comments I have. I think this would be a great project.
Just one real quick question. On the recapture agreement, normally that's when the new developer comes in and they pay the original person to do the utilities. So how does this work in this case? Does someone have money owed to them, or do we pay it? Is the city paying? I mean, how does that work?
It was the city's recapture
for
work there, and it expired. So the original agreement expired. It was in 95. It was for 10 years. It was like 2005. It expired. So we're not collecting on it, and we just wanted to memorialize that in the agreement that they're not paying for something that they aren't required.
Okay.
Different agreements are structured different ways, too. So there are some where there's a payment required at the end of the term, and some where it's just money lost.
Because we have one down
west.
It's a big one.
Sure do.
Yep. Okay.
Yep.
Okay, item 6, EDC 2017-15, vacant building registration program.
I guess my recommendation would be to skip this conversation. It doesn't.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, we'll table that. So that's not a critical time frame type thing, so we can just put it on the next month's.
Correct.
Okay. And then the last one would be old business, EDC 2017-09, downtown planning update.
Yeah, that's an informational item, too, if anybody has questions.
The one thing, because I know reading through the memos that came out, it's kind of complex what's going on now and what we're discussing. At some point, should there be some kind of full council, you know, workshop or something that on how this all plays out? Or because there's a lot of decisions, it sounds like, that we're going to have to make down there.
I don't think you need a separate meeting to do it, and I don't think the issue has progressed far enough yet to take a full council. You know, the next full discussion would be deleting the properties from the TIF and then proceeding forward with establishing a new TIF, a new second TIF. And that requires probably a committee meeting, you know, maybe a little bit of a presentation and then a city council discussion. So
when we delete the properties from within the TIF, do we then have to reroute and kind of do like the herb to the corridor strip so they're contiguous?
Oh, yeah.
And so anything that, you know, we were looking at the map that you provided that showed the deficits of the EAVs, each one of those has to be corridor connected to that. So that's going to be quite a challenge to do that because when we get done with it, we have to have a legal description of that. So that's going to be
big. Well, the meat and
we also have to do a TIF study for the new TIF that we would create to put those back into. Because our intent would be to take them out, put them in a low-value TIF.
Correct. Yeah.
trying to say this as well as I can. Low-value TIF and trying to monopolize on the quality values that we have and create the two separate TIFs. the new TIF would also be expanding potentially into new areas, or would that be a third?
Yeah. No, it'd be yeah, ideally you'd want as few TIFs as possible.
So we're trying to get two.
Yeah.
The existing and the new.
Yep.
The new would encompass those low value,
mm-hmm,
and the new territory.
Correct.
To try to offset the deficits in the EAVs.
Yep.
And collectively, since they're contiguous, there's money sharing between the two TIFs.
Correct.
So, trying to make the best of both worlds, separating out. Now, I read a great white paper today on TIF studies and whether or not they're worth it and if they actually do help business or the redevelopment or if they don't. And, you know, it was a really good article. Their summary is that statistically, out of the ones that they pulled and did the research on northeastern Illinois, most of the TIFs did not function as well as communities with downtowns where they didn't do a TIF study.
Hmm.
I'm not saying I want to abandon this process because I don't think we're at that position yet. But
I'd be curious to read that study.
I'll send it.
And wondering who. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll forward it out to the committee because it was interesting. It's kind of strange to think that we're putting all this effort into TIF and their analysis shows that some communities it really doesn't do anything. They think that it would have done better without. But I don't know if maybe some of it's psychological that we see TIF investors down here that. I don't want to do it because I'm not going to get anything back yet. You hear that kind of comment. What am I going to get back? When am I going to get it back? How quick? I don't know. So
the other thing I was thinking about, so you're going to have to go out to the different taxing bodies, right? It's going to be somebody from the staff or somebody's going to go reach out to those people.
Mm-hmm.
Before you do that, you probably would really have it kind of documented in a fashion that they're going to understand it when you go to them, because otherwise they think we're just kind of drawing it in here and there, and I wonder what their reception will be to that.
Yes, so there's two processes. One, the extension, you've already endorsed the extension concept to City Council, told me to basically send out the letters to introduce the concept, invite them to a meeting, or me to take it to the board meeting. So I put that on hold while I was figuring this out. Okay. So that is an informal process where, through any method that we think is just, we're trying to assist them in making the decision that, yes, they can support the extension of the TIF. And then if not, they don't, and then, it probably doesn't get extended. The actual creation of a new TIF requires a fair amount of work on our end, up front, and expense, before you actually go through a formal process of notifying them, giving them a seat at the table through the Joint Review Board, and then a vote, basically, on whether they recommend a new TIF. And the JRB, with all the taxing entities involved, if they think that it's a bad idea and vote it down as a recommendation, then it raises the City Council threshold for having to approve it. So it goes from, I think, a majority to a supermajority. So that is a formal, structured, many-month process that they would then be brought into and really given a chance to give, feedback and figure out why we were doing it and why we think it's, a good or a bad idea.
Because don't you think that they may ask, well, the original TIF didn't work the way you thought, and why do we want to do another one?
But I think
the
reason behind that, why...
You need to
ask, what happened? Why do you want another one? Why do you want to extend it? Well, the TIF was enacted in a time right when the market crashed.
Right.
There was no benefit because of the recession. Once the recession's come up, the EAVs have dropped as expected.
Yeah.
And therefore, to date, the value of the TIF has been mostly useless. So, to extend it to a full term again. We're coming out of recession. Things are starting to move. We're seeing changes, positive changes in EAV. And then the expansion of the TIF, a new TIF, that is just beneficial to helping to offset the low values in continuing downtown improvements.
I just think the PR.
The widening of 47 is an important part of this, too.
Right. Because that actually extended our downturn numbers for this area, I would say. I mean, it you know, construction didn't play well into getting over.
When 47 was being widened, we were
losing EAV all the time. I mean, it was still on the decline even when 47 was going
through. That just prolonged people from putting an investment back into it in certain instances. Which, you know, if somebody's going to reinvest in the building, that's going to drive the EAV up. So that just prolonged people from doing that.
Yeah. The case to the other taxing entities, in my mind, is not going to be a, hey, trust us, it's got to be based in math and figures. And so that's the intent of my extension letter was, here's what you're going to get if we cancel this thing basically now with no new deals coming because nobody else wants to develop down here, take on a big project. You know, you're going to get, school district's going to get $36,000 additionally. Whereas we thought that in a conservative scenario, there'd be $35 million of total investment across the entire downtown over a 23-year period. That translates to, you know, $1 million of tax revenue for the school. So, you know, you can get into the assumptions behind each one of the studies and parse the numbers, but it's like, you know, fine if you don't like TIF, you think it's not going to work or whatever, fine, you close it out, here's what you get as a result of it, and then we sit there without all these additional tools. Or the alternative is, you know, here it is, and you got to wait a little bit longer, obviously, too, but it has the potential to ramp it up.
Yeah, I just think the PR needs to be good on it.
Definitely, yeah. And we were pretty fortunate the last time we did it, too, that all the taxing entities, you know, joined in the process and, you know, were open-minded about it. And I don't think that anybody objected to it at the time. So that's good news.
Well, let's see, at the last joint review board, there was one member of the board. Aside from City Staff, right?
The one 2 years ago, yeah. Most recent one that we held just like a month ago, there was actually like six or seven entities.
Which is better, yeah. So yeah. Hopefully there's interest.
I was shocked.
People paying attention.
Yeah, a lot of new faces, though. So to your point, you know, it is something that eventually...
You got to sell it.
Yep.
How long would it take us to kind of get our arms around the costs to go through the process?
No time at all. I'm guessing it'll be $40,000 or $50,000 flat to create a new TIF. A few months in time. I don't know what it'll look like boundary wise yet.
Yeah, and I'm just messing with it.
I don't know which properties will.
You know, yeah. Engineering costs. How much are we going to have to allocate for EAI to be doing some studies? Legal fees. And then the actual TIF study.
I think 50, that this is the study, the engineering costs, and legal costs all wrapped into one. And you can charge that as a TIF expense. So,
assuming we want to. I mean, that's...
Yeah. We did last time.
Yeah. So, yeah, so we're looking at another 50 to get this off the ground.
Yep.
A lot of money. But the return, that's the thing. So, love to see the numbers all said and done of what the return's going to be.
Yeah.
And it's all speculative.
Okay. Any additional business, Chris? I don't have anything either, so if that's the case, 6:54 of our meeting adjourned.
Thank you.